Welcome, everyone, to episode 480 of the NBA podcast. I'm Brian Toporek, and unfortunately, we have some notable injuries to discuss today. Michael Porter Jr., Bam Adebayo, and Damian Lillard among them. We're also going to hit the New York Knicks, benching Kemba Walker, and then the tampering penalties that have finally come down for the Chicago Bulls and Miami Heat for their involvement with Lonzo Ball and Kyle Lowry. So a lot to get to today, but before we get to all that, a reminder that you can follow us on Twitter at the NBA Pod. You can find our Twitter handles in our bio, so give us a follow as well. You can also find us on iTunes or wherever else podcasts are found. On iTunes, please subscribe, download, leave some five-star reviews, and we're being hosted on Spreaker, so you can check them out on Twitter at Spreaker. Joining me today is my co-host who is back from his Parisian vacation, Morten Jensen. How's it going?
It's going well, Brian. Thank you. Yeah, Paris was fun. Super cold. So I think we'd get a higher appreciation of it if we go back in like the spring or summertime. But of course, you also have to take into account then tickets will be like four to five times more expensive. So that's why we actually went now. But whoo, boy, it was cold.
Yeah. Yeah. I will say we went for our honeymoon in July and it was very hot there. So maybe like March or April is the sweet spot.
Yeah. Yeah. That's a good shout. I've heard the same, that Paris generally in July is almost too hot.
Yeah, it was. I mean, I love that kind of weather, but my wife does not. So she got very grumpy at like 2 or 3 o'clock every day.
So you're telling me that you regret moving from the South?
No. For many reasons, no. All right, boy, we have a lot to get to today, so let's hop right in. Unfortunately, with some injuries to discuss, Michael Porter Jr., let's start with him. News broke recently that he was going to undergo back surgery. He underwent it yesterday, I believe, actually.
Yes.
The Nuggets said he's out indefinitely. I believe Shams Charania was the one who reported he is not likely to return this year. As you would just expect for someone with the history of back injuries that he's had, you know, with Jamal Murray's status up in the air as well, the Nuggets have no real reason to push these guys. Like, you just have to, you know, sometimes you lose a season because of injuries. It seems like it's going to be that for the Nuggets this year. So without Murray, without MPJ Moore, they just lost to the Orlando Magic. They are now 10-11. Because the West is kind of a crime scene, they're still in the play-in mix right now. They are, you know, the number 10 seed. But what do you think this injury means for the Nuggets, both this season and then bigger picture as well?
So I actually watched the first half of the Nuggets Magic game last night until it was just too late for me and I had to hit the hay. But what's funny to me is, like, the Nuggets absolutely dominated that first quarter in a way where you kind of could see them do that on a sustainable level, because it wasn't someone getting super hot. It was everything kind of flew through Jokic, of course, dribble hands off, pick and rolls, like passing from the post. Like, he was the main hub, as you'd expect, but it still worked. It's almost as if, regardless of who you put out there on the floor with Joker, it's going to work out in some capacity. Now, again, I didn't see the second half, so something must have unraveled there. But what I did realize watching the first half is I am beginning to understand what Michael Malone is saying about overuse in terms of Jokic, because he is involved now in virtually every single play. And like, for a center who's still, I'm not saying he's heavy anymore. He obviously lost the weight, but it still takes a lot coming up and down the court and being involved in every single play and having to play a drop back defense and all those things. Like, yeah, I can see when he's not on the floor, it gets muddy hurriedly in a very quick manner. So what are the Nuggets to do? I really don't know at this point. I mean, you kind of run the risk of overusing Jokic to the point where, what if he goes down? Then what? What are you going to do? Even if it's nagging injuries here or there, like, oh, he's going to miss 2 games here, 3 games there, 1 game there, that's not sustainable. So what are you going to do? I mean, you can push everyone up a slot in the pegging order. okay, is that going to turn into efficient offense? I don't necessarily think so. So, yeah, it's a really good question that I don't have a straight on answer for. I pray, I guess.
Right. Right. I mean, he already missed 5 games with the wrist injury as well.
Right.
So, I mean, they just don't have a great answer. Like, when 2 of your 3 max players are out, you just kind of throw your hands up and say, like, you know what? Yeah. It's just not our year. Like, it's happened with the Pacers for the last couple of years. Like, that is now just there's nothing the Nuggets can do realistically to get to the tier that they need to. Even though the West is in the midst of a somewhat down year, I just don't see a way realistically they're going to contend with Phoenix, Golden State, right, Utah this year. Like, who knows if Kawhi comes back, if, you know, the Clippers could get to that tier, if the Lakers sort their stuff out. So I think you're right. You have to be wary of overworking Jokic. I know he's, you know, a new dad as well, and I can tell from experience, those first couple months, you just feel like a zombie. And then afterward, you know, like here, 8 months in, I feel like a normal human again. But those first few months are pretty rough, and I'm sure he's got someone taking care of the kid, and he's not, and maybe he's sleeping in a separate room and doesn't have to worry about that. But that is another consideration just to keep in the back of your mind. I think, mm-hmm, you know, Aaron Gordon is going to have to take on a much bigger role. He had 17 points, 8 rebounds, 3 assists against the Magic last night. It's basically him, Monte Morris, Will Barton, and Jokic. And then, you know, you just aren't going to get much out of Campacho or Marcus Howard or Zeke Nanji most nights. Not enough that you can rely on them as, like, consistent, right, 15, 20 point scorers. I'm proud of you, by the way, for not saying you want more Marcus Howard or more Bol Bol minutes. That tells me you've been off for a couple of days.
Well, so here's the thing about that. I've been told that some of the players that you just brought up are not vaccinated.
Good. Great. That's what they need.
Right. To the point where I'm kind of sitting there going, some of those guys could lose time as well.
Right.
So what do you do?
Austin Rivers is now out in health and safety protocols. And it sounds like Bones Highland is out, but he has, like, on Twitter, Instagram or something, he said he didn't have it. So I think he's just a close contact. That would imply that he can come back sooner than 10 days.
Right.
But yeah, adding even more misery to the Nuggets season. They just don't have healthy players right now.
Correct. And, like, I was told there was a significant portion of Nuggets players who were unvaxxed. So
really?
That just opens the door for a lot of things.
Oh, my God. MPJ brainwashed the whole locker room, huh?
Look, that's you saying that. I'm not. I am just relaying something I've heard. Which, like, again, look, if that's true, that's pretty concerning. I mean, that's when you have to, on some level, also ask yourself, look, we're down Jamal Murray. We're down Michael Porter Jr. This might actually be a good time for me as a basketball player to establish myself in this league. Yeah. So getting vaccinated might be a good idea. So you can stay on the court and actually prove your worth. Because if you're one of those guys who are trying to earn minutes and you suddenly come down with COVID, that's a wasted opportunity right there that down the line could cost you millions. And considering that you don't even know what's in a Coca-Cola that you probably drink, I'm going to go out on a limb and say, just get the vaccine so you can actually play.
It's a fair point. I mean, we saw Tyrese Maxey last year when half the Sixers were out with COVID. He had his 39-point game against the Nuggets when it was, like, literally, I think they had 7 healthy bodies.
Right.
But you're right. It's like, this could be the chance for one of these end-of-the-bench guys to break out and cement themselves as part of the Nuggets core moving forward. And before we go to the other injuries, I want to, you know, take the 30,000-foot view of the Nuggets here, because as soon as we got news of this, your little bat ears went up. You've been bringing this up, and I know it gets you in trouble with Nuggets Twitter, but, you know, Jokic is only under contract for 2 more years.
Oh, don't think I haven't thought about this.
Given the injury history with Michael Porter Jr., and given that they just signed him to a 5-year max contract, what does this mean for the Nuggets long term? Like, do they have to start being worried about, you know, is Michael Porter Jr. going to be an albatross contract? Is he going to be the one that kind of drags us down and drags us out of being title contenders? Because we've invested a ton of money in this roster. We're going to be well into luxury tax territory moving forward once that extension kicks in. You know, and then what does that mean for Jokic too?
Mm-hmm. Are you asking me whether they should be absolutely panicked right now? Because the answer is yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. So here's the thing. And honestly, Nuggets Twitter, come at me. You can come up with all your fancy ideas about how this is going to work. Here's my take on it. If there's a trade package out there for Michael Porter Jr., that where basically some team says, we're willing to take him on and we're willing to give you like virtually nothing in return, do it. Like, just do it right now. This is a back injury. This is the second back injury. Like, you just don't know. That's one of the most trickiest areas to figure out physically at all, especially in sports and especially in basketball. I fully realize that if you did that, there is a significant risk that he'll blow up elsewhere and be a star and all of that. But look, if this ultimately costs you Nikola Jokic, you done messed up.
Yeah.
Like that's really what it comes down to. This is prevention of Nikola Jokic just leaving for nothing. And I understand that people say, well, we have a better odds of retaining Nikola Jokic if he has a fellow star in Michael Porter Jr. That's great, but he needs to play. He needs to be able to prove that he's healthy. Like, Jokic is hands down one of the best players of his generation, probably over the past few generations. He's what, 26 and already by far the best passing big man of all time. Like, he's setting advanced metrics records like every single year. This is a generational superstar. This isn't some nice to have star who won an MVP and then might not ever get back to that level of play again. No, this is a fully fledged super duper tier 1A superstar. That takes precedence. That takes priority. Whoever you need to move, whatever you need to do to retain him, that's what you need to do. Regardless of what it feels like, regardless of the cost, regardless of whether or not Michael Porter Jr. blows up elsewhere, that is just what you need to do at this point. And I understand this is a delicate situation because you can't trade Michael Porter Jr. right now because he's a poison pill, yada, yada, yada. But, man, you got to do what you got to do to retain Jokic. That is priority number one. And if you don't do that, then it's on you. Because in 2023, if Michael Porter Jr. is only playing so-so basketball, he misses games here and there because of the bad back or whatever else pops up, and Jokic starts getting those longing eyes elsewhere, Chicago, you know, you're not going to end up in a situation where you can argue your way out of it. Like, oh, well, that makes sense. Like, no, that would just be a terrifically dumb decision to not do what you need to do. And if that means just gathering cap space to find players who are more reliable and, you know, more durable, then so be it.
Yeah, it's a really tough decision. And I will say, you know, I've seen a lot of sentiment since this came out about, like, well, why didn't they, you know, build in more injury protections to his extension? Or, like, why didn't they let him become a restricted free agent and just match? And I hear that, but for the injury protection part, I'm sure they tried to, and I'm sure MPJ's has said no. Like, there's no way that front office, given his injury history, was like, oh, yeah, we'll just give you this, you know, no conditions attached. We're fine. No, there's, of course they tried, but, you know, MPJ and his agent rightfully said, like, hey, if you don't give this money to us, someone else will. Now, it's fair to wonder whether that is actually the case.
Yeah, I was about to ask you that. Would you have called his bluff? Because I sure as hell would have.
I mean, I think it just comes down to, this is like where it's such a tricky balance, because, yeah, you have to hedge against the injury risk, which has blown up here. But you're also trying to, you know, build a culture and, like, show that you really care about these guys and not piss them off because, you know, say MPJ doesn't get hurt, goes out, has a great year. Like, he was off to a slow start this year too. But let's say he's healthy. He averages like 25 and 8. you know, teams are coming bang down his door with a max offer next offseason. He could have done what Gordon Hayward did a couple years ago and taken a shorter deal, you know, taking a 3+1 to, you know, get out sooner, especially as we've been talking about for the last couple months at this point, like align your new contract with the new TV deal so you can cash in on that as well. So this was their way to guarantee they would have him under contract for 5 years. We'll see. It was a gamble, and right now it's looking like it might blow up in their face. We'll see. Hopefully he gets back healthy, and you know, we see next year we get to see the Murray, Jokic, MPJ, Gordon, that core that we saw, I think, for only 8 games after that trade last year. But that team looked like a title contender, so I can respect the Nuggets' decision to go all in on it. Sometimes these things just don't work out, and that might be the case for Denver, but it's just something to monitor long term here, especially if Jokic doesn't sign an extension next summer. Like, can MPJ come back healthy? What, you know, how long does that happen? Can we ever fully feel confident in his back? And what does that mean for Jokic moving forward? Because he will be the next, you know, franchise altering, like landscape altering free agent to hit the market and really potentially be available.
I will say this about the MPJ extension. Like, when it was announced, you and I were on board because we looked at what he did and he looked healthy at that time. But I have to assume on some level, Brian, that the Nuggets have, well, not to assume, that's a dumb thing to say, because of course they do. I was about to say that we have to assume that the Nuggets have way more intel on his medical status than we do, because of course they do.
Right.
I just cannot for the life of me imagine that they would go to an area where they feel confident in saying, oh, okay, this is a 5-year max. We give you every dollar and cent that you want. There's no there's no incentive involved in the contract for possible injuries that you've sustained. Like, you missed your first year of it. You also dating back to college. Like, how can you not safeguard yourself on some level? How can you not do it?
Well, I mean, they did with the last year of his deal is only partially guaranteed, but it's a fair
like
point.
Nothing. Like, you brought up that you brought up the scenario of them of him maybe signing a 3+1, right?
Yeah.
Like, that's fine. Why is that a problem?
You know, if he stays healthy and hits, you want him under contract as long as possible. But again, this is where you have to bake in the risk, especially with the guy with his injury history of, well, what are the odds of him actually staying healthy that entire time?
I got to say something here in regards to like the not player empowerment, that's the wrong word, but just how much NBA teams bend over backwards for players once in a while on contracts, like just the fearfulness of, oh my God, we might lose player X because of this, so we have to overpay. Mm-hmm. Like, let's be real for a second here. And this is not just MPJ, but like sometimes when you have guys who are not the primary guys on your team, like Jokic will always be the number one guy on your team. Mm-hmm. You should always be more careful with the secondary and tertiary guys. Like, there's no reason for you to panic on those things. Like, there just is, as long as you have your main option locked in long term, which they did at that point with Jokic, you shouldn't go out and be panicky about all this ideology of, hey, let's just pay every player everything we can under the sun, because that, first and foremost, that's going to lock you up financially. Two, you open the risk of this, what's going on right now, which is going to lock you in your position, presumably, so you can't really level up and become a real championship contender. So what is the end goal here? Like, do you want to have 3 or 4 guys on max deals? I don't think that's the way forward.
Yeah, in terms of like optimal team building,
right?
Probably not. But I understand why the Nuggets did what they did here. Like, they are not going to be a marquee free agent destination. You're not getting a Michael Porter Jr. any other way other than drafting him and home growing him. So, I see why they did what they did. It just so far it looks like it's going to backfire.
I understand that, and I hear that. I think it's more along the lines of what you kind of talked about a lot a year ago. instead of going with the three stars ideology, that when you have two stars who are maxed out, presumably, that leaves you a lot more money to go to depth purposes or round out your starting lineup. Like if you have three guys who combine to earn $100 million of your salary cap, and one of those guys, in this case, like a Michael Porter Jr. who goes down, that's a lot of money that are just suddenly removed in that way, like that you can't put on the floor. Like that's what is his first year salary going to be next year? It's going to be like late 20s, early 30s, right?
Yeah, I think around 29 million, I want to say.
29.7. So like if you dedicated 29.7 million to depth players, like, I don't know, 10 million here, 5 million there, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like suddenly that those are more bodies that you can bring into the fold. I wonder if this is the right approach to team building. And this is not singling out the Nuggets. Like this is generally the whole three superstar ideology that I'm wondering if it's worth it.
Well, speaking of depth issues, Mort, that is a perfect transition to our next injury to discuss. The Miami Heat and Bam Adebayo. We got news yesterday that he has a torn UCL in his thumb. He will undergo surgery this weekend. The early report suggested he was going to miss between 4 to 6 weeks. I saw the Five Reasons Sports Network folks who are pretty plugged in with Miami actually said, no, it's probably looking like twice as long. So TLDR, we don't know how long he's out, but it's right. At least a month, could be 2 months, could be even longer. We saw the Heat without Bam and without Jimmy Butler last night get pasted by the Cleveland Cavaliers by 26 points. We've been saying we like the Heat top six. We feel pretty good about them. But after that, it starts to get shaky. So, you know, Dwayne Dedmon started in Bam Adebayo's place last night. And he, you know, 11 points, 13 rebounds. That's pretty good for a back. Yeah, but, you know, he's not nearly as switchable as Bam. He's not going to be as key for their defensively. So what do you think Bam's injury means for their season outlook? Like, can you still put this team as a top four seed? Do you think they can still get home court advantage even in the first round of the playoffs if Bam misses, let's say, 6 weeks?
That's a good question, because I don't know whether or not the Heat really focuses on the regular season much. So it might not matter, because as long as they have a healthy team come into the playoffs, and I mean fully healthy, they're going to be a force to be reckoned with.
Yeah.
Now, if Bam is going to miss so much time that he's still playing catch up when the playoffs roll around, that's an issue. But in the meantime, you're right. It's a big question. Like, can they sustain a level of play where they're guaranteed, you know, a top four spot? I don't know. I mean, we have been saying for months now that we question the depth, that if just they've had one or two injuries, major injuries, that could really put a tailspin on a chunk of their season. Now that theory is going to be tested out. If we're wrong, it's probably because everyone else on that roster takes a step up. Like Jimmy Butler starts averaging 27. Tyler Hero starts just becoming a flamethrower again. Kyle Lowry, who has been really modest with his shot selection this year, might actually be forced to take a step up in that regard. And I could see that happening. So I'm not down on the Heat necessarily even after the injury, but you just have to wonder, like, how deep can these guys go? Like, where does the limit go? Because Dwayne Dedmon, okay, like, he can start in a pinch for a few weeks, but can he start 6 weeks? 8 weeks? That suddenly becomes a whole different tale. So, like, I'm going to be optimistic and say I think because it's the regular season that the rest of the guys can put in the work if they want to and stay afloat. But I don't necessarily think they care all that much.
I'll say it would help if Duncan Robinson remembers how to shoot a basketball.
That would help, especially when you take 9 triples a game.
Yeah. He's at 34.9 overall, 31.8 from three-point range this year. Not exactly what you pay $18 million a year for, but you know, you have reason to expect that to regress to the mean at some point. And as you mentioned, Tyler Hero has been phenomenal for them. So he's helped make up for the Robinson. I mean, he goose egged last night, but relative goose eggs compared to his previous production. Markieff Morris is still out with the whiplash from the Jokic fight. So when he comes back, he'll give Miami more flexibility in the front court. You can play PJ Tucker at the five for stretches as well. So it's not like they're going to have to lean on Dedmon for 40 plus minutes per right. game or anything like that. Like if you can piece together a Tucker, Morris, Dedmon, 48 minutes out of the three of them at the five, I think you'll be okay. The question, I guess, is how much do you really want to do these Tucker at the five lineups in the regular season? It's going to be a hell of a weapon in the playoffs, but you just don't want to, in his age 36 season, you don't want to put that much wear and tear on his right. body. So I'm actually, I lean toward Miami not getting home court. And that's more a testament to the quality of the East. Like, I think right. Brooklyn and Milwaukee, you can pencil them in right now. So that
yeah, Milwaukee spots. Is insane. We need to talk about them at a later date. They've yeah. won 8 in a row, and look at their calendar for December. It's nothing. It's a birthday party.
Yeah, so you could pencil those two in. I don't think Chicago's going anywhere. I don't think Washington's going anywhere. I think Atlanta, they're 8-2 in their last 10. They're starting to find their groove. Cleveland, despite the Colin Sexton injury, has hung tough all year. They've won 3 straight. They're 12-10 right now.
Yeah.
Boston, who knows if they go on a nice run at some point. Charlotte, there's a lot of teams in this mix that can conceivably get into that range. And I just think it's, again, the East is just super deep this year. So it's not.
Oh, I'm sorry. You didn't bring up Philly.
Yeah.
Where's Philly?
Nowhere. They are not getting home court either. Unless Ben Simmons gets traded tomorrow. But I mean, that's the thing. Like depending if Bam only misses 4 weeks,
yeah,
maybe Miami can piece it together until then and then go on a nice little late season run here. But I think you're right. They probably don't care all that much. They're much more concerned with let's just get everyone to the playoffs in one piece. And then we'll right. see where the chips fall. The only problem being if Brooklyn and Milwaukee end up as the 1 and 2 seeds, as I think it is safe to assume will happen, barring any catastrophic injuries, you're going to have to go on the road to beat them both. And I think that's where it's going to get tricky for Miami.
Yeah. No, and I hear you, but I mean, God, that this Miami team, it's like when they're healthy, they're so potent. Like, yeah. I wouldn't even be shocked if Coach Spoelstra at the end of the regular season, like with 5 games remaining, just goes, you know what, Jimmy, Kyle, Bam, Duncan, Tyler, you take a 5-game break. It's fine. Sit yeah. your asses down. Go nuts, Max Strus. Take 45 minutes per game over the next 5. It's fine. Go nuts.
And I feel like we actually have to talk about PJ Tucker because he's been still modest offensively, but better than I think we could have reasonably expected coming into the year.
This is what I've been wanting. I mean, this version of PJ Tucker is what I wanted all along. That's why I complained about him as much as I did last year, because he is fully capable of being an offensive presence as well. Now, I understand 6.8 points per game isn't a whole lot, but it's enough. Like, last year, he was starting and scoring like 2 points a game for the Milwaukee Bucks in the regular season. He wasn't starting in the regular season. In the playoffs, he started. But he just wasn't doing anything offensively. Like, he was just such a non-factor. For him to actually shoot the ball now and be more aggressive so you can't leave him alone, that's huge. Like, you can't be someone who doesn't participate on either side of the ball. It just doesn't mm-hmm. work in the NBA. So for him to realize, yeah, I might be old as dirt, but I still need to come in and put up shots. That is a requirement for us to be successful. Good on you, PJ Tucker. It's exactly what I was looking for.
And, I mean, he's never been more efficient than he is this year. It came out right. of absolute nowhere because he shot under 40% overall in three of the last four seasons. He is at 50.4 right now, 43.9 from deep, also a career high, and then 81.8 from the free throw line, also a career high. So career highs across the board in terms of efficiency. And again, it's not like they're going to ask him to create off the dribble all that much,
right,
if at all, during the playoffs, but he's shown the ability to do it at times. So, I mean, he is one of the reasons I would be somewhat optimistic about, like, I don't think losing Bam is going to be a huge blow for Miami. Let's be clear about that.
Right.
I think there is a real chance they fall at least into the play-in territory until he returns, and then maybe they can climb their way back out after he gets back. But I mean, you know, this Bam was probably the least replaceable guy on their roster. Like, I think you could patch things together if you lose Lowry. Butler is probably the other one where it's like, you know, right now.
Yeah, I'm going to say Butler over Bam. I mean, I understand where you're coming from just because of the lack of depth up front, but Jimmy is just so unique, and he's so, like, the two-way play, the free throws, like, the playmaking. I understand they have Kyle, but, like, I'm going to go Jimmy first and then Bam a close second for sure. Absolutely.
That's fair. Yeah. Either way, it's like losing one of those guys is going to be a huge blow for them. So I think they definitely fall out of home court. I do think they're going to be more in that play-in mix until, you know, January, February. And then whenever Bam returns, you know, assuming the rest of these guys stay healthy, wouldn't surprise me to see the Heat make a nice late season push. I still wouldn't want any part of this team in the first round of the playoffs. Again, assuming all of them are healthy. And frankly, it's going to set up, you know, some potentially really good playoff matchups. Like, this is, we see this a lot every year, but I mean, you know, like the Lakers last year where they fell to the seventh seed, and you're like, damn, that sucks. That sucks for whichever team draws them in the first round. And as it turned out, it didn't, because Anthony Davis got hurt. But, you know, like, if the Heat fall to the sixth seed, or, like, God forbid, they're actually in the play-in tournament.
Right.
That's going to really suck for whichever team has to play them.
Yeah. But I will say this. Like, I fear them a little bit less now than I did before the season. And that's not to say they've played poorly by any. They are, like I said, they are powerhouse. They're a formidable group. But if you can keep throwing bodies at them, where you can really exploit the fact that they don't have a lot of guys coming off their bench. Mm-hmm. I mean, even if you have everyone healthy, if you get two quick ones on Bam in the first quarter, that changes things. Like, because they can't keep putting guys on the courts to kind of offset the loss of a starter. So the game plan against Miami going into the playoffs is going to be super simple. Get them in foul trouble immediately. Yeah. Go at their starters really, really hard right off the bat, especially Bam Adebayo.
Well, this is one potential silver lining to his absence, is that it's going to force them to figure out ways to win without him for the next six weeks. So
certainly true.
So if he does get into foul trouble early, especially in a play-in game, you maybe feel more confident in, okay, we can just go to Dedmon, or we can go to PJ at the five, or we can go to Markieff at the five. You feel more confident. Or we can go to
GB at the five.
Yeah. Hell, why not? Let's get weird.
He's 6'8", man. I mean, why not?
Yeah, screw it. I mean, I hear what you're saying, but I'm still pretty terrified that I would not want any part of them in the playoffs.
Oh, don't get it twisted. I am too. I'm saying I'm less scared.
Yeah.
That doesn't mean I'm not scared, Brian.
Okay, good. Yeah. I'm just already excited about the East play-in tournament, because, like, we're going to have at least one or two decent to good teams miss the thing entirely.
Yeah.
Which is wild. But, like, right now it's Atlanta, Boston, Charlotte, and the Knicks are the 7 through 10 seed. Like, Atlanta, Boston play-in game, are you kidding me? Or Charlotte, New York, win or you go home? That's going to be incredible.
Imagine if the Knicks missed the playoffs. Oh,
they
my
very well God. Might.
Yeah. Could you imagine, just after all their offseason upgrades?
Well, like, we'll get to them in a little bit.
Yeah.
All right. Let's actually go, before we get to the Knicks, let's finish out injury update. December 2nd edition. We got to go to Portland, unfortunately. Damian Lillard has been diagnosed with lower abdominal tendinopathy. He is out for at least 10 days. And then Nasir Little, equally important, of course, has a sprained ankle. He's out for at least a week. But obviously, the big headliner is Dame. You know, we were talking all season about how he hasn't quite looked like himself this year. He's shooting 39.7 from the field, 30.2 from three. He's had this the same thing happened in the Olympics, and he referenced this, and he said he's been dealing with it for a couple of years now, which is honestly remarkable that he's been as good as he has been with this going on the whole time. Yeah. But you know, how worried are you if you're the Blazers that it just isn't going to get better this year?
Oh, you mean how worried am I that my clear-cut number one superstar, it might actually have an issue that's going to prevent him from being at full strength? Yeah, I'm very concerned, Brian. That's pretty much my ride and die guy right there. And if he's not up to par, then nothing else matters. And I understand that's being really harsh. That's not to downplay the importance of T.J. McConnell or Robert Covington or Norman Powell. I'm going through the roster right now. It's just you can't go anywhere without Dame. Dame is your closer. Right. Closer. Dame is your point guard. Dame is your playmaker. Dame is your everything. He's your heart. C.J. And Norm, they can maybe take a couple weeks where they amp up their shots. That's great. Is that going to lead to more wins? Not necessarily. Like, who's going to be the primary off-the-dribble guy for them? Neither of those two will do it. Anthony Simons, neither. I mean, who is their break glass in case of emergency ball handler? That has to be CJ, but do you feel confident in CJ playing point guard?
No.
Right.
Not for a long extent, and not with, they're playing the Spurs tonight. So whoever gets that responsibility has to deal with DeJounte Murray all night. They're playing Boston on Saturday. So then you have to worry about Marcus Smart. And you have Clippers, Warriors, Timberwolves, Suns, Memphis coming up. So Memphis's defense is trash, but the rest of those teams, that is just not going to be very fun without Damian Lillard for the Blazers. And this is kind of what I'm wondering now. We had all offseason about Dame isn't happy. He might want out. They make their upgrades, and it took them a quarter of the season, but they finally figured out how to use Larry Nance Jr., which has been nice to see. But, again, 30,000 foot view here, big picture.
Yeah.
Hopefully these 10 days off will help Dame. But,
if it's going to be 10 days, that's the thing. If it's a lingering issue, you don't know if it's going to be 10 days, then he returns, and a couple games later, he's going to be back out again. You don't know.
Right. Right. Yeah. I mean, if he had this going into the Olympics, he presumably took some time off between the Olympics and when he went to training camp. So in theory, he's had time already to recover from it, and it flared back up. So you're right. It could just be an issue all year. And then, I've been harping on this point, but I think it continues to be an issue for them. Nurkic is a free agent after this year. Covington is a free agent after this year. Yeah. Simons is a restricted free agent after this year. This team, with Dame struggling the way he has been, is 11-11. So again, the West is not great right now. They are tied with the Clippers for the seventh best record. But I don't think I've seen a single game this year with the Blazers where I think, this team, they're a title contender. They can match up with the Warriors or with the Jazz or with the Suns. There's no reason to believe that they are actual contenders here. So I just don't know what's next for them. And other than resolve this Neil Olshey investigation, that's probably what's next. Figure out if you need a new GM. But they're approaching a very pivotal trade deadline.
So what is your question here? Whether they should make major moves?
I I mean, I guess so. I just don't know what they should do. It feels like they should, but I don't know if they're going to reach that conclusion. I would be surprised if they do.
Yeah. And like, even if we play along with that idea, like who's out there available?
Ben Simmons and maybe Pascal Siakam, maybe Sabonis or Turner.
Right. Like, I still don't think that Simmons does anything for this team. I really don't. I understand this has been the trade darling all the way through, CJ for Ben. No, I for Portland, I still hate it. I don't see the upside there. Okay, sure, you get better defense and all that, but you still put such a cap on your offense, which has been your primary strength for years. Mm-hmm. So you're what? You want to get up to becoming a more of an average defensive team. That's cool. But if that takes you down offensively to also being average, then you're kind of stuck in the middle right there. I just don't see any path wherein this roster is going to work out. I mean, I've been optimistic about the Blazers for years, but I'm reaching the end of it now. Like I'm the more that I look at this roster, the more that I watch them play, the more I just get this feeling that this is as far as they go.
Yeah, I mean, I would agree. I don't see a way out for them. Right. And, you know, Nurkic right now is playing the good soldier, even though he's been being benched at the end of games for Nance when other teams downsize. But I wonder how long that lasts, especially if we get closer to the deadline and Dame is out and they start to go into a tailspin a little bit. Like,
well, it's the right play, by the way. Just
right. Yeah, totally. I have no problem with that. I think they're using Larry Nance Jr. the correct way, finally. It just took them 15 games. But, you know, Nurkic in the past has been disgruntled about his role, but even dating back to his Denver days. So I wonder, like, is playing 25 minutes a night and not being able to close games, you know, is he going to start to get frustrated and even ask out at some point? So,
but like, even that aside, can we call a spade here about something? Robert Covington. I'm sorry, but what the hell happened? Like, last year he was a shell of himself, even more so this year. He's been absolutely horrid, and he's only 30.
Yeah.
Like, this is where things went wrong. He was someone who should have come in, bridged their defense, bridged their offense. And yet, to some extent, he did defensively. But offensively, he's been just so poor. Over his entire Portland tenure, he's averaging 8 points per game in 30 minutes. He is hitting 40.1% of his shots overall. I want to read you a stat from him this year, which just shows off how passive he's been. And I realize he's more of a shooter than a slasher. I get that. He has attempted three free throws in 581 minutes. When he was in Philly in his first year, he took three per game. I'm not saying that he should stop shooting from outside, but he doesn't even do that a whole lot. Like, he's taking 4.5 shots per game from range. He's not doing anything. He is the living embodiment of, so what is it you say you do here at this point?
Yeah.
Like, this is where things muck up. They need something better, or they need Robert Covington to start playing better. And I hate putting this at the feet of one player because I don't think that's fair. But I think Robert Covington, out of anyone here, should play such a vital part in where they are as a team, and he doesn't. Every single night he comes in, or he actually starts, and it's just you're playing at a disadvantage because he's not shooting the basketball, he's not scoring the basketball, he's just kind of there. You need more.
Yeah, I think he's just kind of been pigeonholed into a role that doesn't suit him as best as possible. Like, they need him to be their primary wing defender, but he's always been better as like a team defender, like an off-ball defender. Like, he's not a lockdown one-on-one guy.
But yeah, he's not a point of attack defender. Right.
Right. But when you're starting, you know, a backcourt of Dame, CJ, and Norman Powell, all of whom are 6'3 or smaller, like your defense is just not going to be very good. So you're going to have a lot of defensive breakdowns, and you're going to have, you know, opportunities for Covington to have to make up for that, or Nurkic on the back end. Like, I just don't think their defense has been in sync in general. I know, you know, Chauncey's changed up their schemes this year, so it's a work in progress, and maybe it gets better as the year goes on. But I think just by virtue of having a Lillard, McCollum, Powell, 1-2-3, you're never going to have even a league average defense with those three guys. Right. Like, you're always going to be toward the bottom of the league. You're going to have to lean on your offense. To their credit, they have a top five offense, but you know, without Dame now, especially, are they going to be able to sustain that? Like, is, you know, Dennis Smith Jr. going to be in for a bigger role? Or I know Simons has been good this year, so I think he'll probably, you know, take over and get a lot more minutes and a lot more shots. But I still just don't see the long term in Portland, and frankly, they might not have one because they don't know who's going to be running that team in 2 months.
Yeah. No, I agree. This is they needed some major changes, both in the front office, roster-wise. It does feel like Portland has become the place where wings go to die. Like, no, but I mean, I'm serious. Even when going back to Terry Stotts and now Chauncey as well, like, when have we seen a proper wing player really assert himself well in Portland? Like, Melo to a certain extent, but there was like this acceptance, I would say, that Melo's a one-way player. Like, yeah, we're gonna live right with him playing defense that at times is absolutely non-existent, as long as he just gets us buckets on the other end and plays off of Dame and CJ. But when have we really seen like a highly influential wing in Portland?
Do we have to go back to Brandon Roy?
Oof.
I mean, there was 1 year where Aminu and Harkless were good.
Right.
They weren't.
That's a good point.
But they weren't like, you know, a high volume offensive star wing. Like, then you definitely have to go back to Brandon Roy. But yeah. I think that's what Portland has always, you know, if you have so much usage with Dame and CJ, you're building around those two guys. You're going to have most of your shots come from those two guys. So maybe you don't need, you know, you need got more wings like a Kyle Kuzma would have fit very well in Portland this year. Like, what he's doing for Washington would have been very nice in Portland.
You still need people to hit shots though.
Right.
And that's yes. Like, Kyle Kuzma is a very good player you brought up there because he would still pull the trigger on shots.
Right. I'm just, yeah, they don't need like a Tatum or a, you know, Paul George or anything like that. Like,
right. But they also don't need a Robert Covington. They need someone in between.
Right. Yeah. So
Andrew Wiggins?
I mean, yeah, he'd be an upgrade over what they're currently trotting out.
But I mean, I'm sure the Warriors are not interested because they're looking fantastic, but
right.
Like the archetype of a Wiggins player.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But how many of those guys are around the league and acquirable? Like, even Thad Young would be really nice there, but you have Larry Nance Jr. already kind of playing that same role.
Yeah. Kelly Oubre?
Yeah, but is Charlotte going to give him up? Yeah, they look good this year.
They do. That's the thing. I'm actually struggling with this because, and see, this is me wanting to give the Portland Trailblazers just one last gasp because, like, you kind of know that it's over.
Yeah.
On some level, you know it's over and you kind of don't want it to because this could open the door to Dame eventually not being in a Portland Trailblazers uniform. But, I mean, as it looks right now, I just don't see where they could head off to. I don't see a way they can pivot.
No, it's been over for a while. They just haven't been willing to accept it.
And nor have we.
Yeah. The spicy trade, if things are really as bad in Boston as they supposedly are between Tatum and Brown, is Dame for Tatum.
I still don't buy that fully. I really
don't. I don't either, but that's where you should start to look if you're like,
right,
all right, we're willing to move. Like, because I don't think Boston gives up either Brown or Tatum for CJ.
Oh yeah, no, not even close. Yeah,
but you would have to at least listen if whoever is running Portland in a couple months calls up right. Brad Stevens and says, "Hey, Dame's on the table. We're not trading him for Ben Simmons."
What at the end Dame? Of the day, at the end of the day, they have enough guards. So you're right. I mean, people can be moved around. I mean, you can easily slide Norm back to the two.
Right.
You also have Anthony Simons who can play sort of a pseudo point guard, still more a natural two, but like it could work. And then there's still CJ and Dame. Like you have four reliable offensive players at the guard spots. That should give you some flexibility to make some moves.
Yeah. And you just have to, you know, the two-way wing is the most desired archetype in the league. So you got to give up something very good for that. Well,
presumably they should have him on the roster right now. He's just not delivering.
Right.
All right. Enough complaints from me. I find it difficult to acknowledge that the Portland Trailblazers era of the Dame era is more than likely winding down.
It is on life support, I think, is the charitable way to describe it.
Yeah.
Speaking of things on life support, Mark, let's go into Kemba Walker's NBA career.
Oh, that's rough. That is too rough.
I had to. Well, all right. So, you know, that he gets bought out by OKC. The Knicks signed him to a 2-year deal. I think it was like less than $20 million. Seemed like
one I think of the it was biggest... 216, right?
Basketball references to almost 18, but yeah, you know, okay. Very what could have been the best signing of the summer if we see even the Kemba, you know, I know he was in and out of the lineup last year, but even if that version of Kemba shows up, best signing in the summer, bar none. Instead, we have not seen, you know, this is probably the worst Kemba has ever looked. Defensively, he's never been a great defender, but he is completely lost out there. So Tom Thibodeau the other day, you know, switched him out with Alec Burks in the starting lineup. And then on Monday said, as of now, Kemba is not in the rotation because it's tough to play, you know, with Burks in the starting lineup. You have Derrick Rose and Quickly coming off the bench. And he's like, it's just tough to play three small guards. Yep. You know, bottom line is Tibbs is still a defensive coach at heart. Kemba is a terrible defender, and that starting lineup was just getting waxed every night. And I think Tibbs got sick of having, you know, needing that second unit to dig out of the holes that the starting lineup kept digging. Right. So where do we go from here? Because Kemba's, you know, under contract for the rest of this year, next year as well. I don't believe there are options on that deal. I think it is just...
It is a fully guaranteed deal.
Straight 2-year deal. So... Yeah. You know, it's again, $8 or $9 million isn't the worst. It's not what Houston is flushing away with John Wall right now, or Brooklyn with Kyrie, Philly with Ben. So, you know, it's reasonable amount of money and not untradeable amount of money. Like, I think come December 15th, when Kemba is eligible to be traded, would not surprise me if he is a name who starts to be bandied about, but you know. What do the Knicks do more? Like, should they just, if they are giving up on him, should they just trade him for whatever they can get?
Of course. I mean, look, here's the thing. This was a gamble, and it was a cheap gamble because you didn't give up anything. You signed him outright. I mean, the only thing you sacrificed was cap space. Like, who cares? That's fine. Like, if you get something back for Kemba that is sustainable, that you can play around with for the next couple of years, that's a win. Then you could just kind of say, oh, okay, we used our cap space on insert return here, which is fine. Like, as long as you don't give up assets, as the Knicks, like, as long as the Knicks don't say, all right, you take Kemba and we give you a pick. Mm-hmm. And to be fair also to Kemba, like, Tibbs benched him. That's important that it's Tibbs, because maybe there's a handful of coaches out there who aren't as maniacal as Tibbs is defensively, mm-hmm. who wouldn't have benched him, who would be fine just playing him because he could shoot the basketball, which he still can. 41% on the year from downtown on over 5 attempts in 24 minutes. Just like, that's a very, very, very impressive line offensively, especially from long range. Like, there are absolutely coaches out there that would be go, yeah, we'll take Kemba. Fine. Like, it's we literally have nothing to lose here because we aren't a tips mentality driven defense. We need shooting. We need guard play. Why not?
Yeah. I mean, I'm completely with you. It's I'm
the Pacers?
That's an interesting one. Yeah, I was trying to rack my brain for, you know, potential landing spots for him. And the one that came to mind immediately is Washington for me.
For one of the million power forwards?
Yeah. Well, I mean, so I'm looking at their books right now.
Yeah.
If Davis Bertans at $16 million, that's probably the most tradable.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, you have Thomas Bryant at 8.7, but
oh, that's a good one.
And I'm sure, I mean, they have no reason not to give up, like, you know, Harrell and Gafford have been fine for them in the middle. So I guess the question is, like, you know, the Knicks have Nerlens and have Mitchell Robinson. Do they need a third true center, or would they be interested in someone? I mean, Bertans, I guess the issue is he's also a pretty poor defender. So would he fall to the Tibbs doghouse as well? But yeah, you know, they have salaries, whether it's Bryant or Bertans, to play with.
Yeah.
Indiana. Who would you think for Indiana?
Yeah, so that was just a name that came up because I think they could use one more guard to come in and just knock down shots. Mm-hmm. Caris LeVert has been, what's a kind word here? Bad.
Inefficient.
Inefficient. Nice, so I don't think they have a whole lot of guard scoring, effective scoring, or just floor stretching. And I would really like to see them with a little bit more volatile floor spacing. Because here's the thing. A lot of people look at three-point shooting as just three-point shooting. But it does matter who you are. Like, a guy like Steph Curry and a guy like Kemba Walker, right now, those two guys are shooting very comparable numbers from three. Like, I think Steph is at, what, 42, and then Kemba's like 41. But obviously, when you compare them, like when you watch video on the two, you are closing out harder on Steph Curry than you are Kemba Walker. So it matters who you are. And in Indiana, you don't really have some of those guys where you just go, oh, that's a knockdown shooter right there. Let's rotate out. You need someone who's dangerous coming off the bounce and just pulling up. Kemba could be that guy. So let's look at the numbers right there, or the sheets. They have a Jeremy Lamb at $10.5 million. And then they have a Tibbs favorite in TJ McConnell.
Oh. Oh my God.
Who's 7.5.
Tibbs would play him 45 minutes per game.
And you know what? I might not hate that.
Yeah.
He's a winning player in that sense. Like, he is a guy who does so many of the small things. Like, I will always get extremely frustrated at his lack of three-point shooting because I think he could actually do it. When you watch him shoot from mid-range, it's fine. Like, you can't, you can easily imagine that he'll be able to stretch out that range. He just hasn't. Mm-hmm. But that would be a fun trade. I would love to see TJ in New York, and I would love to see Kemba in Indiana, although you do sacrifice defense in Indiana by pulling this trade, but
But I mean, Brogdon can play on or off the ball, so you could, regardless of whether Kemba starts or come off the bench, if he starts, you could do Kemba, Brogdon, LeVert, and the two bigs, and then figure it out when TJ Warren comes back, but he's going to be eased in anyway. It's interesting.
Right. And you can even have Karras, like, as a super sub instead.
Yeah, right. I don't think Indiana went into the season, not that they expected to like be a top six seed or like make the playoffs, even given their injuries, especially to Warren, but I'm sure they're disappointed in the first year of Rick Carlisle to be the 13th seed in the East right now. So
yeah,
that's a good shout. I bet they are probably sniffing around for upgrades there.
There's one more team that I want to bring in.
Okay.
The Dallas Mavericks.
Yeah, I had a feeling you were going there. I have one more as well, but Dallas was another one that came up for me too.
For Maxi Kleber.
Oh, that's interesting. That's like, actually, I know Cuban is just in love with Kleber.
as right. he should be. But then I don't, if he is, then I don't understand why he's using him wrong. But that's a conversation for a different day. But like Kemba spotting up off of Luka at Ascension?
Or hell, I mean, even if he doesn't want to give up Kleba, just send Reggie Bullock back to New York.
Is that even illegal? Is that even legal? It is, right? Because it wasn't a trade?
Yeah, I don't see why it wouldn't be.
Yeah, because, oh yeah, he signed outright with Dallas. Yeah. It wasn't a sign-in trade? No.
I don't think so.
It was the, it was the non-tax MLE. You're right. That would be legal.
I mean,
and what has New York missed this year? They've missed Reggie Bullock.
You know, Dallas isn't going to lose him. At least let someone play him.
All right. Well, who was your final team?
Charlotte was mine.
Oh. Every turn. Okay.
Tough to make the salaries work. But.
Plumlee?
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, I was thinking like Ish Smith and something, but the end something is tough because they just don't have like you have PJ Washington at 4.2, James Bouknight at 4.1.
Yeah, you don't want to Jones do either.
Kai Jones, maybe?
No, for Kemba? No, not at this point. You're not giving up Kai or James or PJ for that. Like Ish Smith, yeah, I get that. Mason Plumlee, sure, because overrated much, but. Like, yeah, like I could see that. I wouldn't hate that coming, but would he accept coming back?
Right. Right. And
coming off the bench.
That is the fair question. I mean,
yeah,
I guess no, if it's outgoing, I don't think Ish alone, I think they can get close actually. Because Ish alone, you can, since he would only be 4.5 outgoing, you can take back 175% plus 100,000. So you can, yeah, you can do Ish and then anyone else on the roster. Ish and Vernon Carey Jr. And you get up to being able to afford Kemba.
I have one final one here.
Okay.
Because we talked about Denver previously.
Oh, yeah.
Jermichael Green for Kemba.
Oh, I like that.
There's an added benefit to this. From if that happens, then when we read box scores, we'll actually be able to identify whether it's Jeff Green or Jeff.
I know. Instead of having to just scroll over the link.
Yeah.
Yep. That would be nice. That would be nice. I'm wondering, Philly's another one that could get in.
Oh, Philly. That's a good shout. I mean, he's a ball handler. He's a shooter. So.
Yeah. Like. Again, matching the salaries is tough because I don't think they want to give up Danny Green for him. I don't think definitely right. want to give up Seth Curry. You can give up Korkmaz, and then again, any one of the other guys should do it.
Like Korkmaz and Niang? Because I don't want to give up Niang necessarily.
No, I wouldn't. Korkmaz and like one of, you know, Isaiah Joe, Paul Reed, Charles Bassey.
Ah, okay. Yeah. Yeah. I hear you. Paul Reed. Wow. B-ball Paul to the Knicks. Would you really be okay with that? John Hollinger will murder you.
I know. That's true. Well, I mean, maybe Paul Reed would actually get minutes under Tibbs because he sure is an underdog.
Yeah, we need to talk about that at some point. Yeah. All right. So we just got Kemba out of New York, I can tell. Yeah.
I'm curious to see what his trade value is because given the state of his knees, which are apparently just not in great shape, and given the defensive concerns, like I don't think the Knicks are getting a first round pick back for him.
No, so, God, no. God, no.
So, like, what are they willing to... Because, again, if he's not in your rotation, you have him signed for another year, you got to get him out. Like, there's no point in keeping this guy around past the trade deadline. So just take the best offer you can get, but I'm
And that's
I'm
a rotation curious. Guy. That's yeah, a rotation guy. Like, that. Like, that's Maxi Kleber.
Yeah. I'll be curious what happens come December 15th with Kemba. Definitely something to keep an eye on.
Yeah, but I mean, it is. I will say this though, it's unfortunate, all things considered, because this was supposed to be a homecoming.
Yeah,
and really this sucks. Homecoming so far has lasted 18 games. Yeah. So I know you and I are very busy sending him away in trades, but I also just want to take a second and say, you know, this is a little bit sad, and it's nobody's fault. It is what it is. It's the knee. I mean, nobody's at fault here for anything. It's just an unfortunate situation that's developed, and I think some of us could see it a little bit, but at the same time, I know that I was hoping that it wouldn't come to this because he really enjoyed being in New York. When he signed that contract, he was very much into this whole, I'm back, I'm home, I love it here. So this is a little bit heartbreaking, I think.
Yeah. All right, let's wrap up with the long-awaited tampering penalties from the NBA. The Chicago Bulls and Miami Heat will each give up their next available second-round pick as a result of contacting Kyle Lowry for Miami and Lonzo Ball for Chicago. And, you know, obviously the news of the sign and trade leaked shortly after, or like right immediately at 6 p.m. when the free agency window opened. So pretty clear that they had contact before. I was talking with Jake Fisher. Apparently, so the NBA, the league office was intentional in pointing out that this was not an incident of tampering. But the league defines tampering as teams communicating with players who are still under contract with another team. So I just, I don't even begin to understand what the rationale here is. But I will say, you know, Jake has an article up at Bleacher Report today. Everyone around the league is just like, that's it. Like, okay, we're going to continue doing this. It's only, you know, this is all, the only penalty is a second round pick. And we can get a Kyle Lowry or Lonzo Ball. This is not going to deter us from continuing to do it. So what did you think? Were at, you know, you, what your team now, or your former / now current again team?
Oh my God. It's my team. Okay. Let's see. Yeah. My team. I'm back on the wagon. Yeah. All right. I'm back on board.
So your team was one of the ones that got hit by this. What did you think of this whole ordeal?
Yeah. I'm putting that in quotation marks, like got hit with this, because you know what? That's, like, they would, if you look at the trade for Lonzo Ball, the sign and trade deal, the Bulls could easily have added in another second rounder and it would still have been absolutely worth it. I'm not going to sit here and say that I know how people inside the organization feels about this, but I would venture a guess that they are laughing their asses off. Like, that's it. Or they'd be frustrated. That's what you took you 4 months to figure out. Four months. And coming up with this penalty? Are you kidding me? So friend of the podcast, Jason Pat, was kind of spitballing ideas. He was asking another friend of the podcast, Keith Smith, like, so does it have to be your own second rounder, or does it just have to be your first available second rounder? Like, you could have gotten from a secondary team. And apparently Keith reported that it could be whatever, like the next second rounder you have. So Jason came up with an idea basically saying, well, theoretically, the Bulls could just buy the 60th pick in the 2022 NBA draft for cash.
Yeah.
And that'd be done with it, because then that would be forfeited. And boom, there you have it.
I wonder, I mean, the language was very vague and it seemed intentionally so. So maybe that would be legal. But I wonder if the NBA is like taking a snapshot as of December 1st, your next available pick.
Maybe.
But, I mean, you know, Jake pointed this out. Chicago doesn't have – they've already traded all of their future second-rounders until 2026. They do have a 2023 second-rounder from Denver, but it's only protected 31-46.
Yes.
So, like, hopefully Denver will be good and healthy again next year, and that pick will convey in the 50s, and Chicago won't give a damn you know, the results speak for themselves. I think you're totally right. The Bulls would have happily just included a second rounder and sent it to New Orleans. Like, that's another thing. If you're just going to make them forfeit the picks, like, it seems pretty crappy that you're just cutting out two spots for guys to be drafted. Like, why not just send the picks to the, you know, send the Bulls pick wherever it lands up, send that to New Orleans and Miami, send their pick to Toronto. Like,
so that would open a can of worms. I think that would be one of those things, because this was a sign and trade after all. Like, these teams were in on it. Like, that, you can't reward that. I mean, I was actually a little bit surprised that both the Raptors and Pelicans walked away entirely, because this was a sign and trade deal. What about the flip narrative? You could argue that Garrett Temple was signed and traded as well. he was received by the Pelicans. Why didn't the Pelicans? I mean,
yeah, that's fair. That's fair.
Like, no, it's it, well, you know what I mean about it. It's super dumb, yeah. But like, I do think you're right though. It's unfair to the players. You could make the argument that guys drafted late don't really stand a pretty good chance at making a roster. But even so, I mean, Isaiah Thomas is perfect proof that you can be yeah. the last pick in the draft. So what I really think they should do there is kind of involve the G League a little bit. Like maybe give it, maybe make it a lottery in the G League where the team that wins that lottery in the G League actually gets that the player that is attached to the 60th cool. pick or yeah. wherever that lands. I think that could be a fun little inclusion of the G League. You would have to really flesh it out. This is still an idea I'm brewing on, but I would like to see them get some guys in with those picks for sure. But, you know, let's talk about the subject at hand here, because if this is the penalty, what is the rule even there for? Like, let's just get down and dirty of it, because this is ridiculous. This is this is just such a joke to everything. Oh, we put in these harsh rules. Now you can get a fine of $10 million. The GMs can be suspended. The contracts can be voided, and you can lose first round draft picks. Oh, here we go. We'll just take a second rounder. That's fine. What? Yeah. Like, if you're going to have a set of rules, then you better enforce them. Because if you don't, you're not going to get respected for having them in the first place. Teams are just going to step all over you and do whatever the fuck that pleases them. My apologies on the language there. But I mean, I just don't understand the NBA's logic here. They implemented these changes for a reason and then kind of said, well, screw it.
Right.
Like, what is going on there? I don't get it. I don't think anyone is getting it. So I would assume that this is going to become a topic within the next CBA negotiations, or hell, maybe even during next offseason. Maybe the league just kind of decides to nip it in the bud a little bit and go out, talk to teams and go, yeah, this was a bad idea. We need to find a new structure, whatever, because this is a joke.
Yeah. Yeah, it's all just dumb. Like, I mean, the league knows this stuff is going on, right? This has just been happening every year. Jake reported, like, there's basically a gentleman's agreement throughout the league. If your team is out, if you're done regular season, you miss the playoffs, or once your team is out of the playoffs, it's fine to contact these guys. We're about to become free agents. Like, you know, might as well plan ahead. Like, there are meetings between agents and teams during the draft combine and presumably during the draft as well. You know, like, this happens. And you say, like, you know, more executives and coaches and agents now are joining Signal, which is using end-to-end encryption. So, like, there are ways around this. You know, maybe Mark Cuban saying Cyberdust? Maybe everyone just sign up for Cyberdust so we can know there'll be no proof. All of the tampering will just go away. But it's just, it's dumb. Like, if you know this stuff is going on, I can understand why you would be upset about it. Or why teams would be upset about it, especially if I think it was like back in the Lakers days with Mitch Kupchak. Mm. Like, apparently Mitch Kupchak was just like, nope, we're gonna play this fair and square.
Oh yeah, that's right. And then Magic came in and was the exact opposite, and they immediately got themselves LeBron because of it. Yeah.
Right. So it's like, I can understand if you are one of the franchises trying to play by the rules and 25 others aren't, but at this point, I'm basically assuming everyone, like all 30 teams, are not playing by the rules. So what is the point of the rules? I'm 100% with you there. This is all just dumb. Like, I guess I understand the frustration from teams, you know, like from Toronto, let's say, like if they were hoping to retain Kyle Lowry, and Miami comes and bowls him over with an offer. But I don't think that was the case here necessarily. I guess like Kawhi and KD were probably the more notable examples in recent years, but there's nothing prohibiting Kevin Durant and Kyrie Irving from meeting up and saying, okay, where can we go play? And then, like, even if, you know, let's say the Nets didn't have two max contract spots. Fine, call up Sean Marks, midnight or 6 p.m. the first day of free agency and say, oh, hi, we want to play for you. Make it happen. And he will make it happen. Because, you know, like, it's just, there's nothing you can do to stop this from happening. And frankly, I mean, anyone who works on the content production side of NBA anything knows the highest traffic times, draft, free agency, trade deadline. Like the
we know we can read our podcast stats as well. Absolutely.
And you know, I've worked at enough places that I can tell you confidently, it's like this everywhere. So the league benefits from this type of attention. Maybe they want to like draw it out. Maybe they're sad that it, you know, now free agency it's just like 2 days of explosions and then it, you know, we don't have like the 2014 summer where it dragged out for 12 days or whatever. I just think it's dumb. And okay, they can continue slapping teams on the wrist with second round pick penalties, but no one's going to actually change their behavior because of this. Like, if you're right, if they are willing to threaten, we're going to take away a first round pick, you're going to find $10 million, we're going to suspend your GM or your team president, you got to actually do it, because you're not going to find a more obvious example than this.
Right? I mean, right now, after that penalty was announced, or right after, I would assume GMs were like, oh, you know what? If that's the thing, calling up someone else. Hey, look, I know that your guy is going to be a restricted free agent this year. However, can we already now begin the frameworks of something that makes sense like 6 months from now? Like, yeah, it's, right. This is going to happen. I mean, we've heard before that there are teams that actually discuss this at the trade deadline, which is like, that's in February normally. And then under normal circumstances, free agency starts in July, right? I mean, there's a lot of time in between those. And it's just, yeah, we're just having that conversation. Like, we're running through scenarios. Like, we hear it all the time. So why not just make it legal and then let the best negotiator win? I mean, at the end of it. I will say this, though. I do understand why Bucks fans are absolutely livid.
Yes.
Because they didn't even get Bogdan Bogdanovic. Like, that was a case of they had to relinquish, what, a second rounder, and then the contract didn't happen.
Right.
That's tough when you don't even get your player and you still get penalized.
Yeah, it worked out for them.
It was fine. They weren't the one championship, but I mean, just but theoretically,
It's a fair point. Well, I mean, they would have been better off with Bogdan Bogdanovic than they, like, who's to say they wouldn't have won the championship more handily or been in a better position to win the championship this year, especially because Atlanta wouldn't be as good. So
that's a fair point.
Yeah. There are domino effects here. And, you know, this is where, I mean, if the league is serious about acting on this type of thing, you know, if you're, I guess Bogdanovic was a different case because he was restricted. So they had a couple days to intervene before anything actually happened. Whereas, well, Lonzo was restricted this year, though. So actually, that's...
He was. Yeah. So, yeah. And you know what's funny? Shams was involved both times.
Yeah.
He was the one who broke both of those news. Like, maybe next time when you leak something, you just tell Shams, wait.
Yeah, just, dude. Yeah. Just chill until tomorrow.
Yeah.
Just, it's all stupid. I mean, we've seen this every year since we've been doing this podcast, even before, like, these things get announced immediately. It's like, they negotiated this contract very quickly for an outside free agent. It's like, they negotiated it 2 months ago.
Yeah. And like 50 of us, like, on NBA pundits or beat writers always make the same joke. Well, they really reached that fast. Like, it's, it's this annual thing and we all know it. Like, at one point, you just got to drop the pretenses. Like, and you would think the league, especially spearheaded by Adam Silver, would be like ready to just say, okay, screw it. Let's just work with some transparency here.
Yeah. Yeah. That is the right way to go about it. We'll see if the NBA actually does anything once.
I doubt it. I'm sure that right now, Arturis Karnišovas is on the phone with Denver trying to figure out 2023 Jokic. Like,
Right. Well, I hope he's ready to give up a 2029 second round pick for it.
Oh, no.
All right. Well, that is a good place for us to wrap up. So thank you all, as always, for listening today. Please follow us on Twitter at the NBA Pod. You can find our Twitter handles in our bio, so give us a follow as well. You can also find us on iTunes and wherever else podcasts are found. On iTunes, please subscribe, download, leave some five-star reviews. And we're being hosted by Spreaker, so check them out on Twitter at Spreaker. Until next time, I'm Brian Toporek, and I was joined, as always, by Morten Jensen. Have a good one, Mort.
You too, man. Don't die.